From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Rochester's Broadway. That's the term that was once used to describe the Clarissa Street corridor in the southwest quadrant of Rochester. In the 1940s through the 1960s, the neighborhood produced renowned jazz musicians, black-owned businesses, and a number of community service and social justice movements. Now, it was a melting pot whose black, Italian, Irish, and Jewish residents walked the cobbled streets together or rode the neighborhood's trolleys. But the once thriving economic district was forever changed by policies like redlining and forms of development that resulted in institutional racism and poverty. Those who lived in the neighborhood during its so-called glory days are aging, and they want younger generations to understand what Clarissa Street once was and that the neighborhood's living legacy is rooted in resistance and resilience, particularly for African Americans in Rochester. That is the idea behind the Clarissa Street Reunion, the annual festival celebrating the area's past and future. The first event was held in 1996, and throughout the years, it has struggled to engage young people in the community. Organizers of this year's event are hoping to change that. They're working with members of Teen Empowerment to train youth history ambassadors. The goal is to help young people find connections between the Clarissa Street of the past and the Clarissa Street of today. So this hour, we're going to sit down with some of those youth history ambassadors and Clarissa Street elders who share how the area has changed over the years. And they say this neighborhood's kind of a microcosm of Rochester's history. For me, this is the story of so many different neighborhoods. How much do you know about the street you live on right now? How much do you know about what it was like 100 years ago, 50 years ago, how it's changed, the economics, and in particular, if there have been problems in terms of discrimination and resilience and who has had justice and who has not? That's at the core of this. There's so many threads I think are so relatable, and I find it so interesting. So I'll welcome our guests, and this is a big panel that's going to change over the hour, but Shantara Randall is going to be here for the entire hour, lead coordinator of the Clarissa Street Union Youth History Ambassadors Project at Teen Empowerment, and a social studies and special ed teacher at Monroe High School. Great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Amara Anderson, a youth organizer and history ambassador at Teen Empowerment, and a 10th grader at School of the Arts. Amara, welcome.
Hello.
Elijah Hudson is a history ambassador at TE and a recent graduate of Rochester Prep. Welcome to you, Elijah.
Hi.
And Moses Gilbert is a Clarissa Street Reunion Committee elder and a longtime resident of the Clarissa Street area. Moses, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Well, before we even jump into this, Shantara, I've said on this program many times, it's not the view of XXI, it's just me. And here's my bias. I think TE is one of the most impressive organizations in this city. And for those who don't know much about Teen Empowerment, give me the quick snapshot, and then we're going to kind of talk about what you're doing here.
So Teen Empowerment is a youth organization. They hire young people to promote positive messages and to create changes within their communities. Right now, Teen Empowerment is located within the Southwest community on Genesee Street in Arnett. And so they focus a lot of their events over in that area to try to keep young people from being in violent altercations, to promote young people staying in school, but also looking at policies that affect young people, that push young people out of schools, looking at how we can change the educational system that we exist within and how we can change the justice system and how they see young people and treat young people, how we can improve youth and police relationships within our communities. So that's really Teen Empowerment's focus, is really taking young people, using the voices of those young people, allowing them to speak for themselves in an articulate way to create and promote change in Rochester. That is everlasting, because we know that if we really want to change our communities, that it has to start with the young people that exist within those communities.
And so we're going to have a chance to talk to Amara, Elijah, about some of the work they've been doing, talking to elders in the Clarissa Street area about the history, what they've learned. We'll talk about that in just a moment here. Shantara, tell me a little bit about how Teen Empowerment looked at this event, the Clarissa Street Reunion, which, by the way, the 24th annual is coming up on Saturday between 11 a.m. and 8 p.m., the reunion festival happening, and we'll get you all set for that. But this is something that's been in place. It's just that Teen Empowerment sees this now as a chance to really kind of connect the past and the present. How did that kind of come to be? How did this happen?
So some committee members reached out to Teen Empowerment a few years ago, trying to figure out how teen empowerment could be involved in the Clarissa Street Festival. And so what we thought was that, oh, young people don't have a stage at the Clarissa Street Festival, but young people are extremely gifted as well, and they're talented as well. And so we thought, like, oh, if we combine and we come together, then we can create a platform for young people to be able to display those gifts and those talents that they have as well. And so that opened up a door to us building those relationships with the Clarissa Street Committee, and educating young people on the history of Clarissa Street. But also we saw it as an opportunity to really build intergenerational relationships between the young people and the elders of our community, because we know that the stereotype is that young people don't really respect what elders has to say, and elders tend to be a little fearful of how to really interact with the young people that exist within our community. So we found that this was a perfect opportunity for young people to build those connections, to have these powerful conversations, to gain all of this wisdom and all of this history that exists within Clarissa Street, and spread it to other young people throughout the community and throughout the city of Rochester.
So I'm looking at this poster for the festival, and it's got a picture of Clarissa Street. What year do we think this is, by the way?
Moses.
What do you think, Moses? I've got a picture, and we'll try to post it online for you later if you want to check it out, listeners. I'm curious to know, Moses.
About 1955.
1955. So the younger people on the panel, do you know what that S-O is there? Do you know what that E-S-S-O.
No.
What's that? What do you think that is? Look at the elders in the room are loving this. Look at them going. No? ESSO?
Oh.
What's that, Moses?
That is a gasoline station.
It's a gas station. Oh. That's a gas station. And I'm seeing McGee's Luncheonette. I'm seeing Starbright dry cleaners and cleaning service. And, you know, some cars that are a little on the old-fashioned side there. But how much does this... How much do you remember when this is what Clarissa Street was here, Moses?
How much?
Yeah,
I was a teenager at that point. I lived on Clarissa Street as far as social life was concerned.
You were raised in hell when this picture was taken?
I was raised.
Oh, you were raised. So that's in the mid-1950s or so. And how much has changed? If I stood in the same spot and took a picture today, how different would that look?
Well, SO's gone.
SO's gone.
along with the dry cleaning and several of the homes. Some of the homes have been replaced with newer homes. And so there's a lot of demolition of facilities in that photo.
I look at this picture and I think, if I saw a photograph of the street I live on and it was 1955 or even 1905, would I recognize it? It's just an interesting question for us. But then there's so much history sort of layered into this particular part of Rochester. And again, where is Clarissa Street for those who haven't been there, Moses? Paint a little picture for our listeners and where we are in Rochester.
It borders on the so-called Cornhill neighborhood. It has now been really incorporated into the Cornhill neighborhood.
And so it's technically Southwest Rochester.
Correct.
And so I want to talk to the teen empowerment youth organizers and history ambassadors about what they've been doing. So Amara and Elijah, tell me a little bit about the work you've been doing for roughly the last month plus to kind of get ready and to learn and these interviews you've been doing. I'll start here. How have you done it? Tell me about the work you've been doing.
So the work that I've been doing, so we started in late July. And so basically for the start of us being youth ambassadors, we've been learning a lot about Clarissa Street and what used to happen down there, what was present there, a lot of relationships back then. And we basically learned about riots, just basically how things were back then. And we also got a chance to talk to residents that lived there back then and how it changed from now, and what can we basically do about it, and how can us youth create a change, because we the youth we get viewed as like, oh, we don't do anything, we just fight, we just run wild. So us being youth ambassadors, we're just trying to show these people that we also do good things, and that we can try to start a revolution of change.
What have you learned?
What I learned is that there was a connection that Clarissa Street had back in the early 50s and 60s, but now it's pretty much been broken and disconnected. And now most of the youth don't talk to the other youth anymore in Carissa Street and in our society that we live in.
So, Moses, you were born in 1938?
Correct.
1938. And I want to start by asking you what you make of this project that Teen Empowerment is doing, that they're reaching out, that they want to hear stories, that they want to learn about the past. What does that mean to you?
It's sort of like the concept of the old African proverb that it takes a village to raise a child. In those days, Clarissa Street was like a village, and your mother was my mother, and my father was your father, in the sense of if you did anything naughty, all the adults would tell you so. They might even give you a spanking when you're young enough and send you home to get another one. So we really, our neighbors, our parents were my parents. And so all the children were raised by all of the parents in the neighborhood. It was a safe place as a result in the feeling, regardless of your age. And so as a youngster, you could walk there after dark, and nobody ever thought of any violence that might befall a child playing, going to the store. I mean, there's 5 grocery stores at one time on that strip. It was a pool room. There were restaurants. There were social outlets such as 3 or 4 bars during the length of this of that strip. It was ice cream parlor, bakery. There were so many things that you did not have to go outside of the neighborhood to get the kinds of supports that you want to go and buy groceries and the likes.
And so now, do you think that these conversations are helping these teenagers in significant ways? What are you hoping they're gaining from learning about this?
Well, mutual respect. Mutual respect that we're friends. We are not enemies because we're the difference in our age. We look forward. Parents, we have to do more of these kinds of projects to help the generations respect each other and interact.
Was it a good place to be for you growing up? Were you happy? Were you happy there?
It was exciting. It was great. We had 2 medical doctors in the neighborhood, Dr. Lunsford, Dr. Jordan. We had all kinds of role models like that, along with our parents. Because most of us owned our own homes. Most of us had our neighbors who were looking out for us. We didn't have to leave the neighborhood for much of anything other than go downtown to the department stores. So you felt so safe. You felt like each one was a brother or sister to you, as well as a mother and father.
What would you say was the time of change, the most change? What affected your neighborhood and the area where you lived in Rochester the most?
Well, I think the major project was so-called urban renewal. Now, we had a world-renowned jazz site there, the Pithod. Everybody, I went over in London back in 1984, and there was an American-born artist, a pianist, and he came over and said, oh, we look like Americans to him. And he came over and, oh, where are you from? Oh, Rochester, New York. Hey, I played there. We were real world renowned with the Pithod, and so not only was it a neighborhood social outlet, but folks came from long distances to listen to the artists, as well as world renowned artists coming in to play.
And what happened that changed that?
Well, the major change was urban renewal. The decision by the city fathers, the anticipation of the Interloop Expressway coming into the neighborhood. Clarissa Street used to continue all the way into Main Street, West Main Street, and across and across there. There's a subway station, so where we had a subway, and the stop was at the corner of Clarissa and West Main Street. So urban renewal's plans and what they did broke up the neighborhood.
And so, Moses, sometimes we talk about the inner loop and its dividing line. We talk about urban renewal in sort of abstract ways. You lived there. You saw this happening. Were people, when this was happening, were people talking about it like this is going to wreck the neighborhood, or this is going to cause problems, or was this sold as a good thing for everybody? I mean, what was sort of the feeling in the neighborhood when these changes were happening?
Well, there was disappointment expressed. Starting in 1948, when my dad got a letter to say, we're going to maybe run the expressway through your house, you're going to have to sell your property. Wow. The house still remains. However, you had to don't put big money in repairs of your house because the city's going to take it. Urban Renewal is going to take it. And then for us, Urban Renewal did not take it. But it changed. It did change many of the features of the Southwest.
And so you lost some of what gave the city, this part of the city, its identity. Those clubs that you said you could travel overseas, people were familiar with. Those things started to change. What has been maybe the story of the last 3 to 4 decades or so? I mean, what's happening there now? What do you want to see happen now?
Well, neighborhoods have changed there around America. In our situation, it broke up a neighborhood. A self-supporting neighborhood, both family to family, stores, and social outlets, and many of the homes have been destroyed. Some of them have been replaced with new facilities. But it changed the total character of the neighborhood. You can't go back to the Pithide. It's not there. You can't go back to LaRue's. You can't go back to Vallott's. The grocery stores, the social outlets, and other supporting public programs or businesses, they are gone.
Is anything going to bring them back? Or maybe not the Pithon, and maybe not the grocery stores you grew up with, but could something happen that would change it in a direction that is more community-focused?
Well, the kinds of houses that they're building, they're pretty large as far as the number of people living in them now. The kind of design for the neighborhood. Ford Street basically didn't exist like it is now, and it as we know it now, Fourth Street is a Fourth Street Bridge, for instance. That was the Clarissa Street Bridge when we grew up. They changed the name of the bridge. You know, they discontinued Clarissa Street from crossing the river. Those are kinds of physical changes that will not be duplicated.
Okay, and what's it like growing up there now? You loved growing up there. You talked about the excitement. What is it like living there now?
Well, people don't know each other. It's not a neighborhood anymore as we know neighborhoods of yesteryear, again, where everybody was treated one another as family. You don't get that sense nowadays. And neighbors don't know their next-door neighbors. That's sort of like a suburban behavior that we've adopted into the city.
Mm. Let me ask our other guests what they take from these kind of stories. I'll start with Shantara. I mean, you're someone who's not only working with teen empowerment, you teach. I know you care about the city, and I find Moses' stories, really stirring. What are the lessons you draw from that, Shantara?
I think for me, what it does is it definitely creates a passion and a fire within me to try to promote this knowledge. Most young people and most individuals in general, including myself, prior to this project, we don't have a lot of knowledge of this this history that exists within Rochester. We learned that Rochester was very smug. We learned that if you are African American coming from the South, you can only live within two areas within the entire city, right? The 7th Ward and the 3rd Ward. And once Urban Renewal came in, it displaced thousands of individuals. So when I hear stories like Mr. Gilbert's, it makes me think that there needs to be policies to protect residents like him who have lived within these communities that are now being gentrified, right? And not just within Rochester, but with across the nation as a whole. And that people need to be educated. There's this huge chasm that exists from individuals who have lived within the community for the last 50 years or so, and then new individuals who are now living within that community for the last 4 or 5 or 6 years since it has become increasingly gentrified. And I think that it's really important for young people to know this, to have this knowledge of Afro Rochester, to know about the Pitha, to know about all of these things that used to exist that supported African Americans. I think when you grow up in a city or you live in a city where you can only exist and be unapologetically who you are in two specific communities, it builds community. It brings people together and you embrace one another a lot more, and including home ownership. You know, my grandparents lived in their house for 30 years and they did not move. And so that creates a sense of community. You don't have that opportunity now because many people can't afford to live in these houses. They can't afford to pay the taxes on these houses. And so those individuals get booted out and have to find other places to go. So what it did for me, what I took away from the stories that the elders told young people and myself, was to keep fighting to protect communities like this, keep fighting to promote positive change for young people, because when we ask young people why their communities look the way that they look, they always blame themselves. It's because we can't take care of anything. But then now, I think it made them increasingly angry in a sense when they heard about redlining and restrictive covenants and urban renewal and the displacement of thousands of African American families to find somewhere else to go because we need your house. I think that ignited a fire in them to know, like, oh, we're not fighting against each other. What we need to be doing is we need to fight against those systems of oppression that destroy communities like Clarissa Street. And I think like that is an extremely important message to take away from what they've been learning and what I've been learning as well.
Listeners, if you're hearing Moses say the Pithod Club, you're going, what? That was apparently started at the corner of Clarissa and Troop.
Yes.
The name came from the Knights of Pythias and the Oddfellows Clubs that had previously met at the building. So they called it the Pithod, as far as I understand it. What's there right now in that exact space?
Nothing at all.
A vacant lot.
Vacant lot. Amazing. Yeah, I'm seeing articles about whatever happened to Rochester's Pithod. It's a vacant lot. So what are the lessons you're taking from Mr. Gilbert?
The lessons that I'm taking, well, I know that we can't do anything about urban renewal, but just us being present at the Clarissa Street Festival to show that show our work and show and put all the history that we learned into our work, and just to keep that fire going. You can't bring back all the buildings that was there, but you can bring back the connection and keep that fire going so that the elders still have a sense that, okay, we don't have the buildings that we had back then, but now that we have the celebration going, we can bring back the old times and old connections and stuff like that, and also for the youth to get a sense of how things were back then. So it's not basically that we can just bring back the buildings and stuff like that, because I'm pretty sure we can't do anything about that. But just for the celebration, like, still remaining, it's great, and it brings back a little taste of how it was back then, and it shows the youth also.
What are you taking from Mr. Gilbert's stories?
Well, what I'm taking is that we need to, that we as community need to rebuild of what we lost and what we had. And also what I take from throughout this program that I've been in is to what I need to become as a young man.
I'm hearing, you know, Moses talk about things that are universal. Living in a place, and again, he was born in 1938, and you've been there your whole life, right?
In the neighborhood, yes.
Didn't move away. I mean, you've been there.
I moved around.
Okay. But been there essentially his whole life since 1938, and doesn't have a feel of neighbors knowing each other. He's not just talking about Clarissa Street. He's talking about the whole country, right? I mean, it is interesting. But I do want to ask Elijah and Amara about this, because there is a stereotype, I think, and maybe Moses will correct me, but I think older people have a stereotype that, quote, kids these days are always on technology, or they're not talking to adults or older people. But when you actually, like, read studies of, like, what kids want, what teens want, people still want connection. They want face-to-face connection. They want to feel comfortable in spaces and know people. Do you want to be in a neighborhood where you know your neighbors?
Yes. I mean, I never, like, I experienced with me not knowing my neighbors and stuff like that, but I never knew why. So now that me knowing why things are like this, it's terrible to know. So I think it's more like with all these stereotypes and stuff like that, and us having a youth stage at the Clarissa Street Festival is going to show them that us teens actually care. And there's still more teens out there that still run wild, but us being a role model and actually trying to start change will kind of demolish any of these type of stereotypes.
When you say youth stage, by the way, let's just make sure we got you all set for the event on Saturday. You want to tell us what's coming up on Saturday?
Yeah, so on Saturday from 12 to 8 p.m., we are going to have young people performing on stage. They will be performing poetry. They will be performing their music. They will be performing jazz. And there really have been a huge focus on consciousness and positivity and empowerment for young people, for our community, for Clarissa Street, tying in all of that rich history that the young people have collected over the time. And so what they've done, the 15 young people that work within this project, they have worked on their own individual pieces based off of what they've learned. But then we also reached out to the greater community and we asked the adults, we asked young people, send us all of the talent that you have. And we were trying to find a space for them on this stage to be able to display that talent. And so we've had a huge outpouring of young people who, you know, you may not know exists, youth jazz bands that you might not have heard of, but these are young African-American, white and Latino students who are at Eastman, who are studying to become better musicians themselves, who will be performing at our event. Young women, I mean, I think the youngest person that we have performing individually is probably about 12 or 13 years old. So there's this huge range of talent that exists, and all they are really looking for is a platform. And so on Saturday, they will have that platform. They will have a platform to display those talents and to send out those messages of positivity and a message to say, like, we are here. And you need to use us. We want to be utilized. We want to be involved. We want to be incorporated. So don't leave us out.
And also a new view for youth also, because we have lots of views that we just all about negativity and stuff like that. But with this program and a lot of youth coming to this program and performing, I think it'll be a good start to a new view.
We'll link you if you want to take a look at the Clarissa Street Reunion Festival online. And it's all happening again. Shantara, where is it happening?
Clarissa Street, the youth stage will be almost kitty corner to the gospel stage in the Mount Olivet parking lot.
So before we take our only break of the hour, Tom writes to say, great show. Give Moses a high five from all of us old folks who remember Clarissa Street before the ravages of urban renewal. So there you go, a virtual high five from listeners who say they remember what the city was like before urban renewal.
On behalf of all of us old folks, thank you.
and briefly, and I don't know if Moses can hit this or maybe some of our guests in the second half hour, he's asking, what was Clarissa Street named after? Do we know? I don't know the answer to that.
It was first named Caledonia Avenue. Mm. And right around 1930, it was changed to Clarissa Street. I understand Clarissa Street was the name of a lady who was among the wealthier families in Rochester with Nathaniel Rochester era.
All right. See, and you have the youth at the table scribbling notes down. Yeah. Is that what it was like in interviews, by the way? You were scribbling all these notes, learning all these?
Well, we didn't. We weren't writing notes. We had, like, before the interview, we were writing notes just to get a little background knowledge about the elders. But all throughout the interviews, we basically was just going off of questions that we had. And we were also preparing before that. So it was just normal, just having a normal conversation on camera.
So before we let you go then, I'm going to ask both of you, what were you most curious about when you had the chance to talk to elders like Moses?
Basically, what I was most curious about was just, like, what happened back then and what kind of opportunities they did have back then and what do we not have now. So basically, like, what type of buildings were back then, like, what type of things the youth go to, just basically just bringing it from back then to now and see what's the difference.
Okay. What about you?
Well, what were their life as teenagers, like, to see, like, the difference between us and them and what they have experienced.
Some things stay the same. A lot has changed, and the 24th annual Clarissa Street Reunion is coming up on Saturday, and we're talking about not only the reunion, but why teen empowerment has gotten involved creating this History Ambassadors Project. So you met Amara and Elijah, Moses Gilbert. Thank you very much for your own stories and your perspective. Lovely to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's get that short break. We're going to welcome more guests to share their own stories and perspectives as we take a walk through the history next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren wanted a November referendum for voters to decide whether to open the door for a state takeover of the Rochester School Board. But a judge said that was against the law. The mayor was furious about that. We're going to talk to Malik Evans, who supported the referendum, and Van White, president of the school board, who did not. That conversation Wednesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You've already met Shantara Randall, who's the lead coordinator of the Clarissa Street Reunion Youth History Ambassadors Project at Teen Empowerment. She's with us, and let me welcome as well in studio with us, hello to Jalen Wims, who's a history ambassador at Teen Empowerment and a student at Pittsford Southern through the Urban Suburban Program. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is George Fontenet, Clarissa Street Reunion Committee elder and a longtime resident of the Clarissa Street area. George, welcome to you.
Thank you for having us.
And Mel Henderson, co-chair of the reunion. Mel, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Well, you've had a chance to kind of hear some of the stories, and we're getting great feedback from our audience because I think people are, number one, the listeners are learning about a part of Rochester. They're learning about what urban renewal did and how parts of our city changed. And I think they're thinking about, no matter where you grew up, how this relates to where you grew up and what happened to your neighborhood. Is your neighborhood as thriving and connected as it once was? Or did something change that over time? And what was it? And what would it take to kind of go back in that direction? I'll start with you, George. Give me a little bit of your background in Clarissa, how long you've been there.
Well, I was born in Rochester in 1946. Been a resident of Favor Street, which is off of Troop, which is near Clarissa Street. And as a teenager, I moved to 439 Clarissa, which was Vallott's Tavern. My grandparents owned Vallott's Tavern, and we lived upstairs. My grandfather passed away in 1960, so I moved in with my grandmother. But my parents still lived on Favor, and we had a grocery store on the corner of Ford and Troop. It was called Fontanette's Grocery. So we were only half a mile apart, but I lived with my grandmother all through until I left in the 70s.
Okay. And what are your most vivid memories of that area growing up?
My most vivid memories are that I was fortunate enough to have relatives who owned different properties on Clarissa Street. Like I said earlier, my grandparents owned Vallott's Tavern, which was on the corner of Clarissa and Tremont. My uncle owned the Gibson Hotel, William Stamps, which was also on Clarissa Street. My other uncle and aunt owned Stamps Cleaners, which was on Clarissa Street. And they were all three thriving businesses at the time. So I was fortunate enough to have these role models to look up to and to see the thriving area that Clarissa Street was at that time.
So when you look at it now, what comes to your heart, your mind?
Well, I pass through all the time because, like, now I was listening to all the other guests, and Clarissa Street now is a thoroughfare for people who still come back mostly on Sunday. You have three predominantly black churches that are still on Clarissa Street. You have Mount Olivet, AMB Zion, and Immaculate Conception, where I attend, and where I also went to grammar school at. So you pass through, and you see it dead up until Sunday. And I look back at the times when it was thriving every day. You could see people just walking up and down the street. There's always something to do, places to go. And like Moses said earlier, there were grocery stores right there. And people thought that Clarissa Street was a predominantly black area, which it was, but it was also diverse. My next door neighbor lived on the corner was white, Mrs. Oliver. I love her to death. And most of the grocery stores on Clarissa Street were owned by white merchants. You had Frank and Larry's, you had Stiles, you had Al's grocery store on the corner of Bronson and Clarissa, which is called Samuel McCree now. But when I pass through there, my mind always wanders to think about the old days.
Is it sad for you?
Well, it's sort of sad because, like was mentioned earlier, when urban renewal came through, they promised us so much, and it didn't happen. You know, we had to uproot.
What did they promise you?
Well, they said that, you know, we're going to rebuild the area, which they did lately, but at the time, it took many years before they really rebuilt it. And now it's, you know, you see the James Dobson house on the corner of the James Dobson apartments on the corner of Ford and Troop. You know, those were all houses that all my friends lived in. But now it's a high rise. And like I said, right there on the corner where my parents' grocery store was at, there's an apartment, a little small apartment building right there now. So, you know, when you walk through and drive through, you know, a lot of memories come through. But they kind of moved us, gave us an insight. And at that time, we really didn't go past Jefferson Avenue. And then and then I went to Madison High School. And the only time that you would kind of walk past Jefferson Avenue was to go to school. Because on Genesee Street, Thurston Road, Genesee Park Boulevard, those are mostly all white areas at the time. So now the black folks started moving into these areas and became very nice because they had bigger and better houses. But as we moved in, the white neighbors kind of moved out.
So, wow, I didn't realize we've got a board full of phone calls. I'll try to sneak in some phone calls in just a minute. I've been absorbed in the stories. Real briefly here, George, you're not the first to bring up grocery stores this hour. We talk about community and neighborhoods and what connects people and what makes places walkable, easily, sort of set up for families to have a lot of needs met. There's a lot of talk about grocery stores, understandably. And now, you know, Rochester doesn't have a whole lot of that anymore.
Well, a little trivia. Hart's grocery store that just closed up, that was originally on Clarissa Street, on the corner of Clarissa and Adams Street. And that's where Hart started at. And that was the biggest grocery store on Clarissa Street.
How hard is it for Rochester neighborhoods to thrive if there's no grocery stores?
Well, they were all mom and pop stores at that time in the corner, but Hart was the biggest one. You know, we didn't have Wagmans and Tops at that time. So my father's business was thriving. You know, like I said, he had a store in the corner of Ford and Troop. And it's funny thing is, before credit cards, I remember my father would always have a card that he would write down the people's credit. They would get credit every week, and then on Friday they would come pay their bill. No interest. Just pay their bill on Friday, and you get credit next week.
Different time.
Different time.
Mel, what do you remember most about growing up? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, like most, unlike Moses Gilbert and George, I wasn't born on Clarissa Street. I was born in the projects on the east side. So, but before we moved to the west side of town, Madison and what was the other, Jefferson High School and those places were at, we would go to Clarissa Street to have like a night out. That would be the spot to go. My father and my mother are both musicians, and they raised a musician, me. And because of that, they always talked about the Pithot. The great trumpet player Clifford Brown came down here to play at a set at the Pithot. And my mother and father knew him in Wilmington, Delaware. So one would take babysit me because I was just a little kid and go down and watch Clifford Brown. And then the other one would take over for the second set, you know. So, and I can't being a musician now, I can't stress the importance of the Pithot. I mean, it was like Duke Ellington, Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, Wes Montgomery, Grant Green, George Benson, Jack McDuff, I could go on for hours. All these musicians played at the Pithot. And when I finally got to go, and I have to correct something about this picture. This is 1963.
Oh, 63, okay.
Yeah, because I remember that because my father took me down to the Pithot to see a jazz saxophone player named Stanley Turrentine. It's been mentioned before, this was really a thriving. The best way to describe it is thriving. It was a thriving community. I mean, we would go down, when you got a chance to go down to Clarissa Street and have a fish fry, it was a thing, you know, it was a big deal, you know. And so it was just so, I couldn't believe it. It was just like so bustling, you know. And when we moved over to the west side, we considered, you know, we still continued that tradition of going over to Clarissa Street for Friday nights, you know. So, you know, like George's family with the hotel, the Gibson Hotel. I mean, we didn't know any black people that had hotels and gas stations and laundromats and all these kinds of businesses and grocery stores. There was a lot of grocery stores on the west side, too, but they were Jewish-owned on the west side, you know. And the community was very supportive, black and white. You know, a lot of us remember some of the first Puerto Rican families that moved into Rochester, never mind the neighborhood, because that wasn't going on at that time, you know. But they started moving in, and it was, you know, you got to meet a lot of different people from that perspective, you know. So
what do you blame most for the change?
Urban renewal. I mean, you know, it was just, and my memory of it, or my take on it was almost like a hostile takeover. I mean, you know, there was a lot of promises made. I remember that, and I was a kid, you know. I'm born in the 50s. So I was a kid, and all of a sudden it seemed like to me, and maybe it was just my imagination, but I went to Immaculate Conception. And I remember I had a lot of Italian friends. I mean, a lot of black friends. And one day I woke up and all my friends were Italian, you know, which was cool. And then they moved out, you know, finally, because of whatever. But that's what I remember about urban renewal. It just one day you got up and it was totally different.
The promises you remember, do you think there was ever any intention of keeping those promises?
I really don't. I really don't. And I'm not saying that the promises weren't kept because of some, you know, nefarious kind of thing. I think basically it just didn't happen. You know, it might have been a time factor. Yeah, it wasn't a time factor. Things were changing in areas that I think it moved pretty fast, you know, in terms of actually dismantling the area. So it went down pretty fast, and they were able to put new things in. Mm-hmm. So then it became less and less of a priority. That's a good way to say it. It became less of a priority.
And as it turned out, most of the people thought that when Cornhill started developing, we thought they were moving us out so they could develop Cornhill. And as you see Cornhill today, you see $300,000 and $400,000 homes that are predominantly white, but there's still blacks who live there. But the thought process was that they moved us out so they could rebuild Cornhill.
Mm-hmm. Jalen Wims is a history ambassador at Teen Empowerment. What have you learned most in this project?
I've learned that Rochester is a very historical place. Initially, I thought, you know, this was just kind of a city that no one knew about. But I really liked learning about a lot of the history and, like, that there really was a lot of culture here. Like, the Pithod, I find that very interesting because, like, the musical kind of investment that everyone had into it, I loved hearing about that.
And now, what do you hope to kind of gain from this project? What's the best thing that's going to come out of the work that Teen Empowerment's doing here?
I feel like there's going to be a lot more inclusivity in the community with the youth. I mean, it's called Teen Empowerment, and I really hope that teens in the area and, like, in this, like, that 19th ward, and eventually I hope it'll open up to, like, a larger portion in the Rochester area for youth to kind of go to and express themselves and kind of keep the tradition alive.
Hmm. Well, let me try to squeeze in a few phone calls. We got a lot of interest from the community this hour. This is Ryan in Geneva. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, just wanted to first thank the panel for all their insights. It's been a wonderful program to understand the history of the area. As a developer, I commiserate with urban renewal. I focus on sustainability, and I think in addition to destroying community, it's been one of the most environmentally destructive forces in the United States. And so my question is, how can developers like myself who want to foster a sense of community, who are deathly afraid of gentrification because it's another destructive force in the community, how can we work with the community better to better understand the history? And, you know, what's a step I can take to if I wanted to do something in your community, to understand the history and understand how to actually create that sense of community with the people there rather than me coming in and saying, here's what I think.
Ryan, I think it's a fair and interesting set of questions. And so essentially what I'm taking from this call is, If Ryan or any developer gets involved in a community like this, what can be done in a way that doesn't disrupt or gentrify but adds to a community without sort of cutting? And I suspect our guests will have different perspectives on that. George, Mel, you want to start?
Yeah, I would say probably if you're going to develop the area, to build more homes, not just apartments. When I lived in the area, there were a lot of black home ownership that we had during that time. And so if you're looking to develop, I would say at this particular time, I would say that you would come in. I don't know what area there are to be developed, but come in and build single family homes.
Okay. Shantara?
I think what I would add to that is include the community in which you are coming in to develop. I think that's really important to see what those particular communities want, what they desire, what changes they want to see, and then learn about the history of that community. We learn so much simply by asking the individuals who live within those communities and have lived there about their lives. So I think that you have to keep in mind, what do these particular communities need and want? And the only way to figure that out or to know that is to communicate with the individuals who live within those communities.
Mel?
I'd have to mirror both of those answers. That's basically what you see right now, is that a lot of these communities, you know, everybody's one away from them. Now they're starting to come back for different reasons and for different things. But, you know, that's basically it. You build homes so people have ownership in a certain area, and that way people care about it, you know. And also find out from the community what's going on.
Jalen, as a 15-year-old, when you hear developers, when you hear down city development, do you have confidence that it's going to be inclusive? Do you have confidence it's aimed at helping neighborhoods? Or what's your general feeling on that?
I feel like a lot of times they don't really kind of care like what the community feels. And if they do, they kind of just don't get their perspective on it. They feel like what they're doing is positive no matter what, like, and the downsides, they're either minuscule or they're not, you know, kind of that big a deal.
They're not listening too well. Yeah, Shantara?
I think, too, incorporating and including individuals from different socioeconomical backgrounds as well, and putting that in writing. So if you're going to come in and you're going to develop a specific community, assuring that the individuals who live within those communities will be able to live within those communities 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, and so on and so forth.
And there are policies in regards to dealing with that to help mm-hmm. people stay in place. We'll talk about that on a separate show. Go ahead, Drew.
One more thing a developer could do is to come in and maybe develop a youth center. In our day, in the 50s and 60s, we had Montgomery Neighborhood Center, which was on Clarissa Street. All the kids in that area all belonged to Montgomery Center. Matter of fact, Moses was one of my first counselors at Montgomery Center. And it seemed like all the youth got together. So there's a youth center on Genesee Street, the Boys and Girls Club, but there's nothing in the Clarissa Street area currently right now.
Let me read a few comments, because I can't believe how fast this hour has gone, and I didn't even realize all the feedback we were getting because I was so wrapped up in the stories. Carlene in Rochester called to say she was a card-carrying member of the community, and she wants to reinforce what Moses said earlier. It was a fun place to be. Didn't matter if you were black or white. Wonderful place to be, that she recalls. That's from Carlene. Bonnie says, with all the discussion of downtown development, would this group meet with other community groups to unite in discussions? Important to point out here, what we're talking about with this history project, part of a documentary? Is that right, Shantara?
Yes, it is. So RCTV has been recording every interview that we've done. They've recorded the entire process. They will be at the Clarissa Street Festival to record everything that's going on there as well. So this is being documented, and hopefully we'll be able to establish some things and also kind of set that groundwork so that this work can continue to happen in Clarissa Street, but also in other communities that exist throughout Rochester as well.
When can we look for a doc on this? Next year? You're looking at me like you're going to put me on the spot. Look at Shantara's gone. Thanks a lot.
Next year.
Probably next year for this. So if you've missed any part of this conversation, which has just been so wonderful to have with youth members from Teen Empowerment and community elders from the Clarissa Street neighborhood, there is an event on Saturday. It's the 24th annual Clarissa Street reunion. Now, that event, again, has been happening for a quarter century. It's Teen Empowerment stepping in, doing this youth history project, trying to understand what's been lost, what's there now, what's happened over the years, and a lot going on. And I want Shantara to tell you one more time what's happening and when and where on Saturday.
So the Clarissa Street reunion is going to be on Clarissa Street, and my elders can assist me with this, but Edinburgh to Adam Street?
Yes.
You know, from Bronson, Samuel McCree
okay.
to Adam Street.
To Adam Street, right.
There will be several different stages. Our stage, of course, the Teen Apartment stage is the youth stage. We have an R&B stage, we have the jazz stage, and we have the gospel stage. So there will be great music, great food. There will be different vendors there. Come out, bring your family so that you can enjoy yourselves. If my elders want to add anything to what I'm saying.
10 to 8. That day, and there will be four stages, including the youth stage, which includes the youth stage.
Are you playing any music?
No, I'm not this time. I get to me running around so much I can't even figure out what's going on half the time. I tried that a couple years ago, almost passed out.
And we are so excited to have the Teen Empowerment Group along with us. In the past, the youth have got a bad rap on Clarissa Street. A lot of people didn't come down to our festival because they said the kids were turning it out. But now we're involving the kids, and I'm so excited to have them come. And when I did our first interview with them, to see the excitement they had, the questions they had, and we answered most of them for them, and to see them follow through like this is tremendous. Looking forward to it.
Shantara is here repping Teen Empowerment, but it's a team there. And I just want to say again, Teen Empowerment does remarkable stuff in this community. Send our love to everyone there.
Will do. Thank you.
Shantara Randall from Teen Empowerment. And let me mention all the people you've heard this hour. Amara Anderson, Elijah Hudson, Moses Gilbert, Jalen Wims, George Fontenette, Mel Henderson. Thanks to all of you for a wonderful conversation. Have a wonderful reunion and festival on Saturday. Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You.
Thank you. See you on Saturday.
Thank you.
Tim Shea volunteering today. Probably the best volunteer ever. Definitely the funniest. Gary Putup. Not as funny, pretty good behind the glass. And Megan Mack is the producer and engineer today. I'm just the host, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.